You are listening to Pure Opelka
with Mike Opelka.
Testudo, my friends, and welcome to the Pure Opelka podcast for May 14th, 2018. A momentous day in history. What's that, President Trump?
Exactly 70 years ago, the United States, under President Harry Truman, became the first nation to recognize the State of Israel. Today, we officially open the United States Embassy in Jerusalem. Congratulations. It's been a long time coming.
President Trump is 100% correct in saying it's been a long time coming for the United States to move our embassy to the capital of Israel. And what am I talking about? Well, there was a law passed, an actual law passed in Congress, the Jerusalem Embassy Act of 1995. It went through in 94, but it is the Embassy Act of 1995 that said, we're going to put our embassy in Jerusalem. It even put money aside, a whole ton of money aside. But presidents wouldn't get it done. President Bush didn't get it done. President Obama didn't get it done, despite the fact that President Obama was even on record sucking up to Jewish voters and declaring that the embassy belonged in Jerusalem. Listen.
Any agreement with the Palestinian people must preserve Israel's identity as a Jewish state with secure, recognized, defensible borders. And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Almost as big a lie as if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. That was Barack Obama before his first election, sucking up to voters, lying to voters. He had no intention of moving the embassy to Jerusalem, none whatsoever. And then he worked against Israeli interests. I'm so happy that this president has 5 months after he made the promise, 5 months after he announced we were moving our embassy to Jerusalem, it's done. It's open. The celebration is on. But you really wouldn't see it if you were watching CNN. They didn't carry Netanyahu's speech. They carried a little bit of Jared Kushner's speech, but not much at all. If you wanted to hear the Israeli leader speaking, you had to tune over to Fox. And Benjamin Netanyahu had some pretty nice things to say about America and the moving of the embassy.
Dear friends, what a glorious day. Remember this moment. This is history. President Trump, by recognizing history, you have made history.
What poetic language, beautiful language from the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He had more to say. There was lots of praise for America today and for the president. And frankly, he deserves it and we deserve it.
Last December, President Trump became the first world leader to recognize Jerusalem as our capital. And today, the United States of America is opening its embassy right here in Jerusalem. Thank you. Thank you, President Trump, for having the courage to keep your promises. God bless the United States of America, and God bless Jerusalem, the eternal, undivided capital of Israel. Baruch ata Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, shechiyanu vekiyamanu vehegiyanu lazman hazeh. Thank you very much.
In English and in Hebrew, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, quite appreciative for what President Trump and America has done today, opening our embassy, moving our embassy, as has been promised for over two decades. Finally, it's done. Thank you, President Trump, and happy 70th birthday, Israel. We hope you have at least 70 more. Just one more thing about the opening of the American embassy in Jerusalem today. I am shocked, stunned, but I'm also not shocked and not stunned that there were zero Democrats in attendance. You had several Republicans there. I know I saw Lindsey Graham and Mike Lee and Senator Ted Cruz. They were all there, but I understand there were zero Democrats, despite the fact that there are several prominent Democrats who also happen to be Jewish. You know what? I think I figured it out. I know why Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Dianne Feinstein, I know why they all stayed back in Washington instead of joining the Republicans in Israel and celebrating the opening of the American embassy as we promised we would do over 20 years ago. I think they're doing it. They're staying home because they're getting that extra little bit of work done before Congress takes a break. After all, President Trump suggested maybe they shouldn't go away for a little Memorial Day break, an extended vacation until they get their work done. It's kind of like mom and dad telling us we have to get our homework done before we go out to play. The Democrats, the politicians, certainly aren't going to like a businessman approach to Washington, D.C., but I applaud the president. Thank you, Mr. President, for leaning on Congress, left and right, and telling them, get your work done before you take this break. All right, I'm shifting gears, moving from the politics to the upcoming weekend. We just talked about the fact that the House and Senate are trying to sneak out of D.C. before they get all their work done, so they can get home to some Memorial Day partying, no doubt. Well, I know a lot of us are going to be doing some Memorial Day partying, and I feel it's incumbent upon me to get our old buddy, Chef Carl Ruiz, back on the show to talk about what we should be doing, what we should not be doing when it comes to barbecuing. Carl, how many mistakes am I making? Am I screwing up? Do I need help?
Yeah. I've been giving advice for the last couple of weeks about barbecue, Mike. And a lot of it, people don't want to hear it.
Why?
You know?
Why?
Because I tell them, I said, barbecues are all about the sides. Most of the stuff that people enjoy at the end of a barbecue are going to be stuff that's already prepared. You know, good coleslaw, the fruit salad's right. You know, all the fixings for whatever you're grilling have been done and are correct and well-seasoned. You know, most people pay so much attention to grilling a couple steaks that everything else they serve is a complete disaster. It's out of a can.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, you're right. I have a tendency to lean on my local deli for sides, you know, because
right.
See, they're
and
doing
and that,
it
to me,
better.
What I do with barbecues is I go out of my way to make them almost like a fix-in bar. I don't grill a lot of things, but I have a lot of options that you can put on those things.
Oh, so you'll have like a basic choice of burgers or dogs, and then how you customize it is up to you.
Right. I do burgers, dogs, and chicken breasts. The chicken breasts are for the space aliens that come to the barbecue, but you do those three things, and then you have taco shells, you have buns, you have everything so that people can have a really good time, and you end up not grilling for three kids, or, oh, can I get this, can you give me a little bit of that, and then that frees up the other side of your grill for the people that are really there to win, and you can make some ribs or a pork shoulder, and enjoy your barbecue day unimpeded.
Now, Chef, and for those of you just stopping in, we're talking to Chef Carl Ruiz. You should follow him on the Twitter, at Carl Ruiz, or he's on Instagram, too, and Facebook, and does a lot of food reviews from places that we go to. Chef, I want to know, is it okay to use propane to barbecue, or am I relying on a crutch?
No, it's fine. Listen, I'm happy that you're barbecuing. See, I have a different everything. I'm excited that you're actually outside and you're cooking. So that's my baseline. I know so many guys that are so diehard with their they're charcoal only or they're wood only. And guess what? They only grill three or four times a season, number one. Number two, everyone that's with them is absolutely annoyed because everything takes three times as long. The whole house is full of soot wherever you put this thing, and they don't really know how to do it well. So I'd rather you use propane every day than charcoal once a month.
Okay. All right. I'll take that. And I have to share with the audience a tip you gave me that changed my life. About a year ago, I called Carl to say, hey, I got a really expensive cut of meat, and I'm terrified of screwing this thing up. And Carl told me, try something called sous vide, and it's sous vide. And it's a method of cooking meat using a hot water bath that has a very precise temperature control on it. It takes a little bit longer than barbecuing, but I cook the meat in the sous vide cooker, and then I do the searing, if you will, after the meat's cooked. Is that cheating, Chef?
Absolutely, it's not cheating. Nothing is cheating if the end result is better. So
it's better. The steak is always perfect, and it's tender.
Right. So if you take that, the people that take that as cheating, I tell them, well, is cordless phones cheating? Are automobiles cheating? Are shoes cheating? You know, things progress, and sous vide is one of the best ways to cook. And let me tell you, as far as barbecues are concerned, you can sous vide the whole barbecue the night before and just finish it on the grill, and you'll probably end up drinking and eating with your guests. You'll have nothing to do.
See, that's the miracle of this. As I said, Carl told me about this about a year ago, and it's not a fortune. The sous vide cookers are under $100. And all it is it's kind of a thick stick that goes into a water bath, and it keeps the water at a temperature that stays consistent. And I put the meat in at 2 o'clock, and I can serve it anytime till at least midnight, and it's going to stay perfect, and it's never going to be overcooked or dry, and cheaper cuts of meat are tender. And I'm a convert. I'm a convert to the point where people go, oh, just don't start talking about it. We're going to clear the room.
I had a barbecue that I had to do, and the guy was on a budget. And I said, okay, I bought a giant chuck roast. I sous vide it overnight, and I showed up, and I made Maryland-style pit beef sandwiches. And all it was this chuck roast, potato bread, sliced white onions. I made a horseradish sauce, and people were in love with it because they're like, this is the most tender thing. So it doesn't have to be expensive. Sous vide really lets you cook on a budget. And I tell people all the time, it's the cheapest way to cook because there's no waste.
Oh, that's, so, you're so right.
Don't make a mistake.
There's zero waste. And to prove how right you were, last month or the month before, Consumer Reports magazine had it on the cover, and it said the chef secret that nobody has told you about, and it is the greatest secret. And I'm just there. So simple sides or simple meats, sides that you've already gotten prepared that can help make everybody's burger or hot hamburger or chicken breast customized. And you can have a great barbecue. Thank you, Chef. Always love hearing from Chef Carl Ruiz. If you're not following him on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, you're missing out on some pretty entertaining stuff, as well as great information about cooking. He's changed my perspective and taught me a whole lot, not only from picking his brain, but from watching him. Before we get out of here today, let's do a little This Day in History and maybe a word of the day. I think I have a good one for you. On this day back in 1796, 8-year-old James Phipps is the first official recipient of Dr. Edward Jenner's smallpox vaccine. Before 1796, smallpox was a devastating disease. And, you know, we've kept little bits and pieces of the smallpox virus in freezers around the world so we can make vaccines in case something happens and there's an outbreak. On this date in 1804, Lewis and Clark took off from St. Louis for their expedition out west, eventually reaching the Pacific Ocean. Also on this date, as we mentioned, in 1948, the Jewish National Council proclaimed the State of Israel, and within a matter of hours, they proclaimed Jerusalem to be the capital, and within a matter of hours, they were being attacked. So Jerusalem and the State of Israel have been under attack for 70 years. They are our best friend in the region, freedom's best friend in the Middle East. God bless Israel. Also on this date in 1998, Frank Sinatra passed away at the age of 82. Francis Albert Sinatra, the chairman of the board. Yeah, I admit I'm a Sinatra fan. If you want to listen to one great Sinatra album, may I humbly suggest you get Sinatra Live at Madison Square Garden. It is, it's just very different from all the other studio albums, and yet it's pure Frank Sinatra. All right, how about a word of the day? I went back in the old Wayback Machine and got myself a word from the Nixon administration when Spiro Agnew, the vice president who ended up resigning before Nixon resigned, the vice president referred to the news media in a speech written by William Safire as the nattering nabobs of negativism. Quite a wonderful alliteration, don't you agree? The nattering nabobs of negativism. Better than fake news, but let's break down those first two words. A nabob has two definitions. It's a noun. It is either a Muslim official or governor under the Mughal Empire, but it's also a person of conspicuous wealth or of high status. So if you call someone a nabob, they could be a conspicuous consumer, someone who always shows you what they spend and how they drive or the clothes they wear, the jewelry they sport. But a nattering nabob is someone who talks casually, especially about unimportant matters. So when Agnew referred to the press as the nattering nabobs, he was giving them a little bit of a zing. Try and use it today, either nattering or nabob. I'm sure you have a nabob or a natterer in your presence, okay? Three times today, and it's yours for the rest of your life. If you want more of this, we generally do the podcast every single day of the week, and Angie Austin and I also host a radio show. You can hear it by going to angieandmike.us, angieandmike.us, or follow me on Twitter. You'll find it there. Till next time, testudo, my friends, testudo. Oh, wait, Prime Minister Netanyahu's got one more thank you. Prime Minister?
Today, the embassy of the most powerful nation on earth, our greatest ally, the United States of America, today its embassy opened here.